Blog Talk Radio.
Eric, we'll be going live in a very few minutes. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethea. And you know, if you've been following us, we're broadcasting over the World Wide Web, over Blog Talk Radio from your nation's capital. We're streaming over Facebook, Link, and Twitter. And you know, if you've been joining us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show is, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation and development companies. To address the economic effects of high energy costs that are historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands, HBCU campuses, to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects, to bring down the unemployment and underemployment among young African-American millennials locally and nationally, also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts on climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangep, as in Paul, C as in cat.com. It's also brought to you every week by Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional, newspaper production, online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, and speaker bureau management. And for contact information, that's Scotton Communications Network, Scotton Communications with an S, network.com. It's a mouthful, ladies and gentlemen, but that is the contact information. So welcome once again back to the airways of Solar Now in the Future with this economic impact on Black America. And we have a very, very exciting show for you today. We're going to be delving into a lot of areas today. We're going to be at the top of our hour here. We have the privilege of having with us Mr. Eric Derrishaw, founder of the Omni Research Group and 3DFS, And I'm going to let him explain all of this information to you in just a few minutes. Like I said, we're going to take a pause, another pause for the call, sort of catch our breath here on Solar Now in the Future with this economic impact.
Life is a song worth singing. I do too. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.
Welcome, welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And once again, I'm your host, Ronald Bethea. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, you can reach us by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. But we're pleased to have in our studios today Mr. Eric Darashaw, who is based out of the New York area, and he has a Green Church Initiative. And without further ado, welcome, Eric, to the airways of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Well, thank you very much, Ron, for the invitation today.
Well, you're more than welcome, Eric. Could you please share with our listening audience a little about your background and what brought you into this, because you're also a minister. So what sort of guided you into this green initiative and working with to deal with this looming worldwide, what we would say, the house is on fire issue, climate change and solutions to that?
Sure. I appreciate it again, Ron. So I have I spent several years in Washington as a senior economic advisor to the president and national board of the Philip Randolph Institute, which is the oldest Black labor civil rights organization founded by A. Philip Randolph. And when I left the organization, one of the issues that we focused in on was looking at how do we, create opportunities, particularly workforce opportunities for union workers. And this was right around the same time that the Obama administration came in and began to look at the issue of green jobs. And so I wound up, when I went back to New York, being a consultant to one of the only Black organized and Latino organized green locals as part of the Laborers International Union and Laborers District Council of New York. So I came in from the workforce development side, and it kind of dovetailed into a whole energy practice, which we'll talk about today.
Well, I know that this is a very, very small community when it comes to African-Americans, specifically our folk in this arena. So I'm pretty sure you're familiar with Reverend Milton Puryear, who has a hip-hop ministry, and he speaks around the country. He delivered a very, very inspirational talk in Warren, North Carolina, which was aired over WPFW, not that I'm trying to advertise for them on this platform, but he has a platform called The Coolest Show on climate change, and he sort of is trying to reach out to our Z population and our millennial population around this issue of trying to save this planet, because we don't get the one. So could you sort of dovetail into the partnerships that your organization is affiliated with? Because I know y'all work very, very closely with the Green Church Initiative.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so my work, I wound up, when I came back to New York, being appointed executive director of the First Ecclesiastical Jurisdiction Urban Initiatives, which is affiliated with the Church of God in Christ. And essentially, I was bought in order to come up with innovative ideas to address the issues that are impacting our community, particularly around the economic development side. And that work led me to try to educate clergy and church CDCs around potential opportunities in the green economy. And as a result of my work, you know, it's a very, very small network. I wound up affiliating with various different organizations, including Green for All, which is Van Jones's organization, and met Reverend Dr. Ambrose Carroll, who was a fellow for Green for All, that was focused in on educating the African-American community in partnership with the Black church on climate change.
Well, I know that there are a lot of tentacles out here, especially looking at the work that Van Jones' Green for All organization has been doing. I know that had it not been for him getting the Green Jobs Act codified in Congress after Katrina hit New Orleans, unfortunately disproportionately affecting our community in the South Ward, Van Jones was able to get the Green Jobs Act codified. And this whole issue about solar energy is not new. It's been around for 43 years. It sort of came about through the space program, but it really didn't take off until the, I guess you would say, the fiasco with the Walker Bush administration handling the disaster of Katrina and how it affected our community in New Orleans, that the Green Job was codified. And in 2008, when President Obama was elected, our communities, the Black communities, went to the polls and invested in the voting capital to put Barack over the top, then that Green Jobs Act resulted in $500 million in workforce development training monies that went out. I think each state received $10 million, including the District of Columbia. But, Eric, I never saw how that money filtered down to train the young folks in our community, and that's what we try to focus on this show here, because our primary function is how do we get our young people up to speed to qualify for these positions, because we've got all the degrees in the world and intellect in the world in our communities, but very few of our young people are applying for these positions in these renewable energy industries. I mean, you can go to Indeed, ZipRecruiter, put your zip code in where you reside, and you will see tons of opportunities in those urban market demographics for jobs in the solar and renewable energy industry, but they're not hiring our people, according to the data put out by the Solar Foundation.
Right. Well, as they would say, this is a multidisciplinary problem, you know, particularly when you look at economic development in our community. And as a result, I will tell you that we're all familiar with the age-old problem of the federal government putting out workforce development money. It gets put into a lot of programs and there aren't any results. What actually happened with the Laborers International Union, that was part of a coalition called the Emerald Cities Collaborative, which were former Obama administration officials that wanted to help to stimulate economic development.
Is that Mrs. Denise Fairchild's organization? Was that collaborative put out by her organization? Because I know that
she's a very
dynamic African-American sister in this area. And it's good to hear that some of our organization is spearheading some of these public policies.
Yes, yes, and absolutely. And as you know, Denise and I met some years ago, and her interest, of course, was how she could engage the African-American church. Now, the Emerald Cities Collaborative included the Laborers International Union, several foundations, and also Green for All. And so, of course, with the Green for All being a partner, it was only a natural, she didn't know about the Green to Church campaign that was started by Reverend Dr. Carroll, who's a fellow at Green for All, and we started to talk and see how we could work more closely together. But I will tell you again, the problem that has always plagued us is that workforce development money goes into our community and it goes down the drain. And it's a very, very complex problem, because even among the unions, they don't fully understand green jobs. And I will tell you that the workforce development money was way before it was kind of, you know, early stage. And the market dynamics in terms of the green economy, green jobs, solar, insulation, all of the various facets of green jobs and the green economy had not caught up. So what they wound up doing is training a lot of people with that Obama stimulation money here in New York City, and they didn't have anybody to, they didn't have any jobs to place them. They had a very, very innovative union package, wage and benefit package that addressed the issue of unions' work is too high, and a lot of contractors move away from non-union contractors. But they had a very, very innovative wage and benefit package that paid living wage benefits and so on and so forth. But unfortunately, there weren't any jobs. And the reason why there weren't any jobs were the business managers that are responsible for managing their locals did not necessarily have the requisite background, okay, in order to be able to procure green job opportunities. And, green construction is something that's been around, but it hasn't been organized in the way where it's a focus. And that's what was innovative about Laborers Local 10 in New York City, which was the only Black and Latino local formed around training for the Black community for green jobs.
Well, Eric, one of the issues that I have on this platform constantly, we beat the drum around the funding, we beat the drum around the lack of community engagement by those nonprofit organizations that's receiving this funding, because most of this money is not going to the organizations that's being led by African Americans. And I'm going to be very, very candid. When you are walking into our communities, knocking on doors of people who are age 55 years and older, and they peek through the hole and they don't know who you are, and you're talking about you get trying to put it's a program that'll put a solar system on the top of their rooftops, but before you do put a PV system, you got to fix the roof. And I mean, our communities locally and nationally, we've seen every kind of hustle, every kind of group come through our communities, always talking they're going to do something for us for nothing, and it's no free lunch. In our communities, our people aren't stupid. They realize some kind of way they're already paying for that, and most of them don't. Have the ability, and nobody talks to them about simply showing them how to read their local utility bills that they get from the gas, water, and electric companies. And if they begin to look at these bills, you'll see all of these compliance fees for this, that, and the other on these bills, and which are helping to pay for these programs. But nobody talks about that to them. They just come in and tell them they're doing something for them for nothing. And our people are not buying that story. And a lot of these organizations simply are not able to galvanize our community, because I think it takes people from those communities to galvanize those communities that people know and trust. And that cuts across, you know, that cuts across all ethnicity, because everybody will tell you, it ain't what you know, it's who you know that's willing to do something for you, because knowing people don't mean nothing if they're not willing to help you. And I find that is what happens in a lot of situations. A lot is promised, but very few is delivered when it comes to our community.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and I think, you know, to be, you know, our black conservative brothers will say, you know, we also got to take a look at ourselves, and we also have to take out the time to make sure we understand this issue thoroughly. It's not always the conspiracy theory that we're being excluded. I would say that we may not be prepared, and so therefore our focus should be on the preparation. And so hence, in terms of building models, when we start to look at this issue from a labor perspective, from a faith perspective, we're all in the same communities, labor and faith. But we do know that the church plays a key role, particularly in our communities, and has a trust of the communities. And so the Greener Church campaign developed what's called a renewable energy development team. It's myself and a couple of other colleagues of mine, a brother by the name of Aaron Clay, that was funded by the U.S. Department of Energy SunShot program to build a platform to be able to proliferate and help to develop the capacity of community organizations, as well as understand the development model that would be the pathway forward for us. And I think a lot of the work, everybody's focusing on the finance and everybody's focusing on, you know, how many roofs, but you're absolutely right. The key part of it is the education and the intake. If we look at some of the crises that took place around the mortgage industry, high predatory, practices and so on and so forth. And we do know that the Congressional Black Caucus came out against, against the whole solar energy for those predatory practices. And it's not dissimilar to what happened in the mortgage industry, but of course, CDCs and, CDFIs were tried to develop models where there was a intake process, and there was actually, before you got your mortgage, you had to sit down with your HUD counselor. You had to walk through the process. You had to go through classes. And then you were able to make an informed choice versus somebody knocking on your door, high speed, and trying to sell you on why you should, choose, renewable energy. It's just, that's not the approach.
Well, Eric, what's troubling to me is I hear you elegantly break this thing down and you're making it plain to our listening audience, but when it comes to organizations and it comes to government agencies, have they ever heard anything called black media? Because it seems as though it does not get any consideration as the voice that our communities listen to. We're talking about the Reach Medias of this world, headed by Tom Joyner out of Dallas, Texas, that syndicates shows around this country. We're talking about the Dr. Kathy Hughes Radio One Network, which has about 76 different stations, radio stations around this nation, where I know that black radio stations, which have been in these market demographics where we reside, and people who come on those shows with content and format, but when it comes to delving in and putting together dedicated programming and funding that programming for people such as yourself who really has some important information that needs to be disseminated through a platform, if it's not mine, then Reverend Perrier, I mean, I can count on one hand how many platforms talking about the impacts of climate change, talking about the impacts of the economics around this green new economy, where we got a major candidate, Bernie Sanders, talking about if he's elected, he's getting ready to spend $16 trillion, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't say billion, I said $1 trillion. We're talking about legislation such as renewable portfolio standard laws being passed, and we're going to get into this. New York just passed the most ambitious climate target in the country, because you're out of that New York area, and I want to know how this impact on our community. But these are game-changing public policies, but people such as yourself, who can deliver that message when you get to talking about your elected officials, when you get to talking about African-Americans working at EPA, DOE, who are in policy positions, you can't get them on the they got a gag going on them, brother. So how do we deal with these issues? This sure. Dissemination of information is a major hurdle for our community.
Well, I think, you know, one of the key things, again, is that we have to look to the strength of what's in our community and our institutions, because they are in the forefront and have the trust. Like for my church organization, that's part of this National Coalition of the Green the Church campaign. You know, we're the largest African-American organization in the United States, second largest, with 6.5 million members in 50 states and 60 countries. We do have a progressive a presiding bishop. He actually has the West Angeles CDC that actually has green initiatives. He's one of the very, very few progressive thinkers. But I think, you know, part of the issue is in terms of communication. I just remember when I was in college and I saw these young hipsters, yuppie hipsters, playing Frisbee and asking me if I wanted to work for Greenpeace. Well, I'd say, well, what's that got to do with me? And so when I say it's a multidisciplinary problem, there are a lot of different elements of that. But the role of the Black Church and the Black Church CDC and what the Green the Church campaign is also looking at it from a faith perspective. There are a lot of very, very progressive seminarians that are coming out of theological seminary. Reverend Dr. Carroll is looking to bring them all together to share the message so it can be shared on Sunday and what this has to do with us. You know, we've always been environmentalists. We have people of color, but it just has not been told in a story, and it hasn't been in the forefront of our messages, particularly on Sundays. And there's reason for that. But I think this is not a sprint; it's a marathon. The communication we have to play to our strongest institutions. Church not being the only one, but it could be a major institution that could be part of the communication message.
Well,
the
Eric,
second
I,
part
I,
of it.
Yeah,
the
go right
part
ahead, brother. I apologize. Go right ahead.
The second part of it is that when we communicate with pastors, we know that a lot of Black church CDCs, are doing affordable housing. You know, they're doing economic development in the community. And so what we have to do is we have to build their capacity to be able to go in and retrofit and bring solar into their communities and other technologies, train workforce, you know, build the coalition and partnership. And that's a model that I'm building right here, and that's being supported by the state of New York in its pilot phase as we speak. That will integrate and bring in technology workforce that will explain the development process to Black Church CDC, the church that we are working with here. And their CDC was part of the national U.S. Department of Energy Community Solar Challenge as an entrant, which was looking for sustainable models. And so we think that all of the institutions, the media, you know, African-American church CDCs and various other elected officials do not understand this. I will tell you, and by the way, not only are not elected officials, the market is so new, a lot of the state officials, irrespective of color, don't really understand it. So green jobs are not just going to magically fall out of the sky into our community. There's a you know, whole process to educate elected officials, to work with those institutions that can go in and communicate the message. And each one of them have their unique characteristics. And that's why I say that we got to build a step-by-step process in order to be able to take advantage of this big economic opportunity.
Well, SOS, brother, because this is how serious this is. Now, according to scientific data and research, with the melting of the polar caps, with the fires in the Amazon forest, looking at the strength and the consistency of the hurricane seasons and the economic impacts it's having on the world worldwide, with the wildfires, with the earthquakes, because of the economic stranglehold that the gas and oil lobbies has over our elected officials on a state and national level, with the impacts that the when you look at our wholesale markets in energy, such as the PJM region, which we're part of here, in the demographics, and looking at 70% of your energy is a coal and gas. And I mean, we are caught between a rock and a hard place in terms of time with this process of how we get our people educated around these issues, because that's something we don't have anymore. I mean, could I be just an alarmist, or where are we with this thing?
I think, you know, again, it just goes back to our culture, and we as people of color, we've always been environmentalists, you know, and in terms of the preservation of the environment, reverence for the earth, and reverence for nature. That's part of who we are as African people. But, you know, it's somehow, in terms of our communities, that message has not been able to be presented in a way that links it with who we are. And so part of that process is all of the various different folks there, whether it be academia, whether it be, you know, the clergy, whether it be elected officials, whether it be, you know, all of our progressive brothers that are you know, talking about African culture. It's something that has to be communicated in a way. And again, in terms of a model, there are progressive thinkers out there that are doing work. academic work. That's one of the things that the Green Church is doing, is particularly with a focus on seminarians, but it's a collaborative, and getting that message, you know, to our local communities. And then the second part of it is, I think, you know, showing what the economic development benefit is. You know, there's a huge opportunity for us there. And but again, to most people of color, you start talking about some green stuff, they say, what's that? Or if you talk to a church CDC, they say, well, what that got to do with saving souls? So it's just that kind of thinking, unfortunately.
Well, Rev, this is the problem I'm having. I mean, you don't have to be no rocket science like my you know, my grandmother, Miss, God bless her soul, Miss Emma McLeod, I hail from South Carolina. And my grandmother used to pick 400 pounds of cotton. And I was a little boy. I mean, I was a little kid trailing, following my grandmother up and down those cotton rows down there in South Carolina. And my grandmother used to have some sayings. She said, you know, if common sense was common, then everybody'd have it. Now, when we began to look at energy, we're looking at, we need trained electricians, because electric vehicles are here. Artificial intelligence, AI. Based on all of these folks with all these initials behind their names, they call PhDs and MDs and CPAs, as they project in the future, and for me, the future is now. When I look at the fact that they're talking about the displacement of a third of the workers in this country in the next 10 to 15 years because of technology and automation, and we can't get it clear that we need to reinstitute vocational training in our high schools, and we need energy advisors. We need to train electricians so that they can do this, be certified, so they can do the infrastructure wiring for these residential and commercial charging facilities for these electric vehicles. When we begin to look at the green infrastructure for all of these dilapidated housing issues in our communities nationwide, with billions of dollars out here for this type of development, well, I mean, what is it going to take to get people to understand it's not the young people's fault that these curriculums and these workforce development certification classes are not being offered at our historically black colleges during the summer months? You don't have to have a four-year degree. While you're in school, you can go online, and if they can partner with the North American Board of Electric Practitioners, and they can, the churches can open up these computer rooms and these in our public schools and get our people, young people, up to speed in these certifications. You don't need no four-year degree to get this thing moving.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's exactly. I'm actually working with a African American technology company that has, you know, one of the largest social services delivery platforms in the United States, and in 27 states, and they're a tech company. And they're building a whole platform to do exactly what you just talked about. But the other part of it, I would say, is that you got to understand, again, the key is understanding the development process. Because, you know, how do you do green development? And a lot of the focus has been on the construction side. And I applaud the construction side. But there's a whole world of engineering, analytics, software, you know, and I will tell you, a lot of the new technologies are not construction based. You can get the same type of energy efficiency, you know, and I, as you and I, when we started talking, I talked about one particular technology, which is a SaaS application, which is called software defined electricity, which is basically a high speed matrix computing system, that you attach to a building, the electrical grid, buildings are still utilizing technology, particularly in terms of the inverter, okay, that was created by Nikola Tesla over 100 years ago. And the building infrastructure still is using mechanical inverters. Well, there's a company, you mentioned 3DFS is one of my clients, that has developed a high-speed computing SaaS application that's a plug-and-play application that you can just attach to the three phases of the electrical box of the of each building. And when you attach it to three phases, it takes less than an hour to install. And what it does is it takes utilizing high-speed computing system and algorithm, it takes a digital snapshot of every device that's connected to the building's electrical grid. And it adds and subtracts the exact amount of power that's needed in real time at the nanosecond level. And that basically, you can get the same reduction in energy efficiency than you would get from putting in new insulation. So there's a whole tech, energy tech sector. Energy tech. I'm affiliated with the 2030 district here in New York, which is a national district that had 20 cities. And we are affiliated with Tandon School of Engineering at NYU that has something called Urban Futures Lab, which are basically energy tech companies. So we need to understand the development process and how technology fits in. The project that I'm working on here in the city, I mentioned the SunSwarm platform funded by USDOE. We got funding from the New York State Energy Research and Development Agency to train local communities, local organizations. We work with a couple of Hispanic organizations that have huge building portfolios in database development. And it's the database and it's the data that is going to be very, very key to being able to do the energy transfer and also very, very key to the education process. So, again, understanding the development process, a lot of focus is on hey, let's put it install solar panels, but it actually goes a little bit further than that. You got to understand first the development process. I mean, anybody that does any energy consulting will tell you first you got to do energy efficiency before you even put in the solar panel. So you start talking about solar panels and the building's not energy efficient, that has all kinds of implications in terms of the potential contracts, PPAs, the financial, documents that may be created between whoever is financing the project. So, again, understanding the development process, how technology fits in, understanding difference between the construction side and the tech side is going to be very, very key. That's the education process that our CDCs have to embark on. And there has to be a technology transfer. The tech industry has to provide us with the technology and retrofit our communities.
Yeah, I just want to put a plug in it right there for a minute. Because, see, I get it. I understand what you're saying. It makes, a little boy said, make plenty of sense. And like I said, when you begin to look at the fact that if you go into any building, anywhere, if the lights go out, the heat goes off, or air conditioning go off, everybody's going to leave out the building. Everything starts with energy. Everything ends with energy. The problem that I'm having with this whole conversation around when you talk about one aspect of the technology, and then you got to look at the other aspect of this technology, which with around energy, which is cybersecurity. Now, the Federal Regulatory Commission here in Washington, D.C., just fined Duke Energy $10 million. I posted in our data content, news and events tab, an article about the Federal Regulatory Commission and how many breaches, cybersecurity breaches that take place with our public utilities on a day-to-day basis because of these attacks by hackers. Not only is this costing the utility companies hundreds of millions of dollars because they're being fined by the Federal Regulatory Commission for not being in compliance, but they're not hiring the young people that they need to hire as cybersecurity technicians and engineers to resolve the issue. They would prefer to pay the fine, even though there are already tremendous fines around this issue. Not only when we're talking about that, the threat of shutting down the grid, but we know that everybody's information is with your local gas, water, and electric company. So when they hack into these systems, they're able to get people's social security information, who you are, everything you are. These utility companies have your personal data. So these, and that's what these people are after. They're after the information of their customer base. So when we began to drill down on this and look at these issues of we need more auditors, energy auditors. They're teaching this in high schools in this country, but they're not. You got a program over here at this Green Tech High School that needs to be replicated with this one over here. It's not like we don't have people who have established in our communities these models, just like the work you're doing. But there seems to be no way to seem to link this stuff together. And I've heard you talk about the different partners that your affiliations are with. Why haven't this stuff come together already? Because it's not like what we're saying is something that's not needed.
Well, I think this is a collaborative, and I think the work that you're doing in terms of trying to bring together a collaborative to examine this issue. But this is, of course, the lack of diversity, in corporate America. So when you start talking about green jobs, then what type of corporate policies are being promoted to ensure that our communities of color are, part of this whole process of bringing in and deploying all these
Brother Eric, excuse me. I got to do like brother. One of our great ancestors, Brother Malcolm, used to say, let's make this thing plain. This industry is 80% white men running this industry. When you begin to look at the CEOs of your solar installation and development companies in this country, the Solar Foundation
absolutely
cranks out the data.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And, well, I'm also, in terms of, the work that I'm doing, I'm part of a group called the Interface Center for Corporate Responsibility, which is the leading corporate governance advocate and social responsible investment advocate with a portfolio of over $200 billion. And they have are the ones that you see in the corporate boardrooms advocating for climate change policies, for reduction of carbon emissions. But when they start talking about, and they talk to the CEOs and the boards of directors of these corporations about this, they're totally leaving out the issue of what we're concerned with.
Now
you've talked about you want climate change and you want this new policy and this new approach to making your corporation greener, but we ain't talking about green jobs and the impact of that in communities of color. That's not part of your policy discussions, and that's because we're not sitting at the table, and our lefty friends, I want to be, I'm not being disparaging. It's just that they can't speak for us.
Eric, how do we get there? I hear Abigail Harper, the CEO and founder of the Solar Industry Trade Association, when she speaks, well, she's not being biased, but she's saying, look, white women, we ain't at the table. And she's pushing for white women. And I ain't mad at her because she's a white woman. But they're considered minorities under contracting law, and they get a large percentage of the contracts that should be coming to African-American companies. So I'm just saying, how do we get a balancing act since this is called a great experiment? It's called democracy. It's called the United States of America. Now, everybody wants their peace, and everybody's lined up. So how do we get our policymakers and those people who are decision makers in our communities to get on board? Because our people can make a difference. We got entertainers, we got CPAs, we got MBAs, we got the brain power, we got the people in our communities with the six. We got a million African-American millennials making over six figures a year. Why can't we solve these issues?
Well, here's one thing I will say, that, again, as we started this discussion for your listeners, this is a multidisciplinary problem. But, you know, the discussion of corporate diversity and inclusion, or DEI, that's being promoted by institutional investors. There is a discussion that's going on. There's a woman that came out of Clark Atlanta University that started the HBCU Green Fund, Felicia Davis. And she's been in the forefront of the
corporate. Yeah, I had Ms. Davis on. I had her on this platform. And my question to her is the same one I got for you today. Out of 9,000 solar installation and design companies doing business in the United States of America, you go to the Solar Foundation, they tell you the total number of solar installation design and install companies. You got 35 African-American companies.
Sure.
35.
Sure.
I have a cooperative that was founded, and I tell people this, like I have you on, I ask people to go to my website, read what my organization's mission statement is. We are a cooperative. We put this platform together that you own because our sole mission was to get and provide a cooperative where all of our companies could join, come under one umbrella, and they could cross work with and reference with each other and deal with a lot of the issues that they have as individual companies with their different business models, and I can't get them to do that. So that's why I'm asking this question. How do we solve this if we don't want to come together? If someone puts model together, because we don't trust each other from the leadership. Because once someone in our community puts something together and reaches out, that the people you reach out to tell you, well, why should we follow you? I don't care who we follow. What's your plan? And that's
right.
What I asked. Like Bernie McCain used to say, Uncle Bernie used to say on WOL 1450 AM, what's your plan? When I give people a plan, and I'm talking about commercial pace, residential pace, movement coming across this country, who in the black banking community, when I go to the National Association of Black Bankers and I speak to Doyle Mitchell, who's the former president of the Industrial Bank of Washington, D.C., and ask them, would he please send someone from their association over to the Department of Energy and Environment and speak with this white guy Watkins, because we need an African American, several African Americans with a black mayor here in Washington, D.C., to make sure we got some black bankers sitting on this board of directors for this new green bank that they're collecting $256 million of D.C. ratepayers' monies through compliance fees over the next 10 years to finance a green bank to help leverage construction, green infrastructure for $1.4 billion that they got to do in Washington, D.C., here in your nation's capital. But our companies ain't getting none of the contracts.
Right, right. Well, again, I think, this is a new industry. So let's be clear in terms of the development. So the conversations that you're referring to need to happen now before the industry takes off. And so you got to understand it by market segment. In terms of the solar market, the fastest growing is projected by all of the studies in REL and will be the community shared solar market. That's the fastest projected growing in solar market in the United States.
I agree.
But the thing is that in terms of the finance side of it, you referenced the finance side of it, and I know this for a fact, energy efficiency finance, solar finance, okay, is just beginning to scale. Particularly around community solar, there's capital that is coming into the market. But here's what's happening is that there is no real seasoned portfolio, just like you have to whenever a mortgage lender, someone is willing to securitize those underlying assets, they have to have a seasoned portfolio in terms of the performance of those underlying securities. And so what I'm saying to you is that the energy efficiency industry, solar industry, for instance, in terms of community shared solar finance, they're just getting started. And so it's important for black financial institutions to be able to put their foot in the water and provide, energy efficiency or a renewable energy finance project product that they can offer and compete with the other financial institutions that are building products in order to take advantage of this growth in the industry. The other thing is that the energy efficiency finance market is projected to be a $300 billion market, $300 to $400 billion dollar market. And one final point I would make around the finance side, as you and I discussed, debt is always something that we are afraid of. Here in New York State, there was a group that got funded by the U.S. DOE, $2 million to go into black communities and try to educate them about, how to do energy efficiency. But when they said the word debt, they ran the other way. So understanding the finance market and where the growth is not going to be in more debt. What the growth is going to be is something called ESA, Energy Efficiency as a Service, which is an off-balance sheet model that will not encumber the underlying property and have accretive value to the actual building portfolio. So there's a gentleman that came out of J.P. Morgan Urban Real Estate, African-American to African-American portfolios managers that pioneered this finance strategy of doing retrofit finance and reducing the overall operating expense and had some of the highest returns of the real estate portfolio at J.P. Morgan. So there are finance models, but it's not going to – I will submit to you, it's probably not going to be debt-based.
Well, Eric, I know that I asked you the 30 minutes of your time, and I had you on here 60 minutes already, and I need to ask you a few more questions. Do you have a little more time you can share with us? Because my listening audience need to understand this. Whether we are paying attention or not, there's something called public policy, and they're called renewable portfolio standards. Legislation is coming out of the U.S. Senate. I can't think of the senator right now, but it's supposed to be bipartisan, and you don't get nothing too bipartisan that's coming out of the U.S. Senate under 45 administration, but they're getting ready to pass renewable portfolio standard legislation, and they recently signed, Mayor Bowser here in Washington, D.C., signed into law on January 18th, 2018, here in Washington, D.C., the Omnibus Act of 2018, with a renewable portfolio standard, where it moved from 50% with a 5% carve out for solar energy, where there was a shortfall of 7% in 2016, a shortfall of $15 million for the shortfall of DC-based solar on residential homes, businesses, and nonprofit organizations, not having enough PV systems up. So that meant the local utility, Pepco, had to write a check for $15 million for that shortfall, because by law, they were required to buy these energy credits from their customer base. But if their customer base didn't have the systems on their roofs, then the utility company gets fined. Well, the utility company can write the check, but they then turn around and pass those compliance fees on to their ratepayers in the form of compliance fees. 2017, that jumped to $26.6 million. 2017, the credit market, extracts market, which are sold every day, took a hit. They dropped almost 100 points. So the stakeholders got real nervous in Washington, D.C., and they pushed real hard, and they got the legislation through the city council, and they moved to 100% with a 10% carve-out. So that will double these compliance fees in Washington, D.C. And the long and short, as they say, we'll get to the point, is that there's more money out of our ratepayers' pockets over the next 10 years at the rate of $256 million to finance a green bank. This is the impact that this legislation had. It was a part of the renewable portfolio standard legislation. It's just one aspect of it. There are a whole lot of other areas if you didn't read the bill. And our people are not reading the bill. They're not paying attention, Brother Eric. So I want to drill down on this. New York just passed the most ambitious climate target in the country. And I want you to sort of tell me, how will this impact our black folks and our families up there in New York City?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, again, as I had mentioned to you in terms of building models and applying, excuse me, in a real world environment, my organization, and so my affiliation is I'm with a green community solar development company. I'm also with a group called Agile Fractal Grid, which is a hyperscale computing and managed power systems, systems integration practice. And here's the problem, even with that legislation. You can say that you're going to want New York State to be 100% renewable energy, but when you start going into black and brown communities, okay, and trying to, it's like they have no plan. So you have all these mandates that come down from the government, okay, and they don't really understand the problem. And it goes back to what we talked about before. They are not going to be able to send in, you know, organizations that are from outside of our community. We are wise. We understand, you know, that, you know, a lot of time about Democratic candidates who come around, they kiss the babies during the, you know, during election time, and then they give us a set aside. That's not going to work.
I just want you to hold up for a minute, because we're going to have to take a pause for the calls, because I looked up and we didn't even let the people know who's paying for this.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. sing it. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I mean, I'm very, very much engrossed with this brother's conversation, but we still got to take a pause for the calls and let everybody know that this show is brought to you every week by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar companies to address the high effects of energy costs at our HBCUs to utilize Black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives to bring down the under and unemployment rates between in the African-American community locally and nationally. Also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community locally and nationally through solar shows such as Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. It is also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF's Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. Also by Scotton Communications. So we are blessed to have these sponsors who pay the bills every week so that we can bring you this platform. So we also have to take that time and go to this, because unless we get that information out over the airways every week to our listening audience, you won't be able to hear Brother Eric and the valuable information that he's bringing. So I apologize, Brother Eric, but please go right back into informing our listening audience about the impacts of this new renewable portfolio standard legislation being passed in New York and the economic impact it will have on, and it will have an economic impact on our community there.
Absolutely. And again, as I was sharing with you before, these mandates that are sometimes provided by the government, sometimes done in the vacuum, and they don't fully understand on how it's going to get done. So if you want to make New York State 100% renewable energy, and you got a huge part of your population, okay, that really don't understand what this transition is all about, and particularly in communities of color, what you're going to run into is roadblocks that are self-inflicted, because the policymakers don't understand, how to get it done, and one of the things that you continue to emphasize is, again, You want to make New York State 100% renewable energy. Well, who's going to go into Harlem? Who's going to go into Bed-Stuy? Who's going to go into the communities of Latino and other communities of color where it's significant to help implement the energy transition and the policy goals? You have to give – there has to be three things in my view. You have to provide support financially as you continue – whether it be Black media and minority media, You have to also provide financial support to the community organizations, the tech industry. There has to be a technology transfer, okay, of technologies around energy efficiency. And then there also the private capital markets, okay, have to provide the capital to our CDCs and community organizations so we can go and retrofit our own communities. If they think they're going to send somebody in from the outside and get that done, they will be. They will. The fines are just going to continue to go up and up and up and up and up and up because they're going to get done because they're going to be lawsuits, they're going to be litigation, just like it was here in New York State. The litigation injunction against predatory practices in a deregulated state, okay, against low-income people that were being victimized by the energy, the ESCO industry.
Eric, please say that again, because, see, I've been saying, and I've had callers call in and tell me, I'm just playing the race card. So I'm just saying I cannot go in to anybody else's community and expect them to understand me, even though I may be of African descent. But if I don't speak Spanish and I'm not of that culture and I don't know these people's culture, I can't go in their community, just like they may not be able to go in another ethnicity. You got to get people. This is a smorgasbord, folks. You got to involve everybody in this. You can't just pick and choose. You got to get people from all ethnicities, groups, colors, and the whole nine, and you got to educate an army because you can't go out there. They make these policies, but you got to have foot soldiers.
That's right. That's right. Well, I agree with you, and you know, so what we've done here in the South Bronx is we formed a coalition with the community, some of the largest community development, affordable housing community developers, the Latino and African-American controlled, that have a building portfolio of 450 buildings. And basically we're putting together a whole comprehensive plan for them to basically build their own retrofit program, build their own community solar program, to build their own workforce development piece that will consider, that will also look at construction, as well as training young people on the software for energy audit, training them on database development. Grant that I've gotten is a trade, because without the problem with the solar market and the reason why they come up with these unfunded policy mandates is that they don't understand the development process. And what they're doing is they're doing it backwards. They're trying to come up with these mandates, okay, without doing the pre-development work. And the pre-development work traditionally has been this door-to-door stuff. Okay, so as I mentioned to you before, Brother Aaron Clay, who got funded by the U.S. Department of Energy, that vetted his model, went through, it just happened to be an African-American company, that built a platform. We're rolling out that model platform where we're training local community organizations on database development and basically giving them the tools to build their own password-protected, security-protected data. And when the development community comes in and wants to bring in capital and finance, what it does is that if you, just in terms of solar development, when you can have the project pre-sold, so I go into Community Board 3, there's 20,000 people that have already been through an education process, okay, to they've been through the intake in partnership with local community organizations that have the trust. Now they have a 20,000-person database. That data is partially owned by that organization, and so when the development community comes in and they need to lease up a project, their project is sold even before they even break ground, and it accelerates the whole development process, and it accelerates job creation, it accelerates the whole process. But policymakers are not practitioners in the field, and they do not understand the development process. And that's the reason why you have the slowdown, okay, and why this is not getting done for a lack of understanding of the development process.
Well, Eric, this is the issue I have. I have an African-American brother out in San Clemente, California. This brother has designed a green technology high school.
Mm-hmm.
He's been training our young people for over 15 years how to become energy artists, how to install
yes.
PV systems in green infrastructure construction development. They've been doing this in high schools in California. Now, this stuff is online. You got the North American Board of Electric Practitioners. You got here in Washington, D.C., they have a brand new $9 million charter infrastructure academy. They took an elementary school, put $9 million, put all state of art, everything. They have a whole system of orientation for people to come in, but they don't have no content. Because they got to depend on the private sector sending someone over to teach the technology course. But what I asked them to do, why don't you just adopt this man's curriculum he got already online in his school he teaches every day?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I agree with you. But I think, you know, in terms of I think part of it is this, voices like yourself, voices, you know, like the Felicia Davises and the Mark Davises and all the folks that are part of this movement, like Reverend Dr. Carroll, we have to lead. And the reality of it is they're not going to get it done without us. They can try all they want. It's not going to happen. And all it's going to do is going to slow down the transition. Unless there is a transfer of resources, technology, capital, then these high goals of $1 trillion, whatever, it ain't going to happen because they're never going to be able to get to the goals that they've set. It'll take them decades to do it unless they provide the resources to folks of color that are in this segment that understand the problem so we can go in and through self-determination and build this out. They can't do it. And they're going to come to either they're going to do one or two things. Either they're going to redline us again.
That's already happened, Eric. That's the point that I'm making. See, I've been working with our historically black colleges and universities. I just spent the bulk of this week here in Washington, D.C., at the White House Initiative on HBCUs. Well, 45 came in and spoke to all of the presidents. They had to sit in the room and listen because he now has power of the pen. Now, people got upset with Amarosa, but they don't know Amarosa, but I do. And I know that she got the White House Initiative on HBCUs moved from under the Department of Education to up under the White House so that the president, by stroke of the pen, by executive order, passed the White House an initiative. Now, I was going to do a support of a segment today on that because I've had you and I've got about 12 more minutes left in my show. I won't have an opportunity to touch on to that, into that. But I'm going to share this with you and the listening audience. By the authority vested in the President and the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, in order to advance opportunities in higher education, hereby is ordered as follows. Section 1, Policy of Historically Black Colleges and Universities, HBCUs, have made and continue to make extraordinary contributions to the general welfare and prosperity of our country. To establish visionary leaders in American HBCUs have more than 150 years produced many of our nation's leaders in businesses, government, academia, and the military, and have helped create black middle class. The nation's more than 100 HBCUs in 20 states, the District of Columbia, U.S. Virgin Islands, and serve more than 300,000 undergraduate, graduate, and professional students. These institutions are important engines of economic growth, public service, and they are proven ladders of intergenerational advancement. A White House initiative on HBCUs to advance all America's full human potential and foster a better opportunity in higher education, strengthen the capacity of HBCUs. Long laid out thing. Long and short, to establish how agencies intend to increase capacities to HBCUs to competitive effectively for grants, contracts, and corporate agreements. Identify federal programs initiated for HBCUs are not well represented. Improve HBCUs participation in programs and initiatives. Encourage public sector, private sector, community involvement, improving overall capacity of HBCUs. Now, he puts together the executive director and the long and short who's going to serve on the boards. All of this here, I'm sitting here and I'm looking, but I didn't see how much money he put in it. Okay? Remember you said something about unfunded mandate? And this is the point that I'm making. This is the point that I'm making to our people in the listening audience. The CEO, former CEO of Wells Fargo, who just stepped down, was here in Washington, D.C. in January at the Mayor's National Mayor's Conference, said that Wells Fargo Green Initiative, they had spent $5 billion in the last 5 years, and their green initiative, they're getting ready to spend $20 billion more over the next 10 years. That's just coming from one private funding source. That's just Wells Fargo. I posted on my website under our news and events segment an issue about billions of dollars coming in from stock market, private investment, billions of dollars are coming into this renewable energy industry. But all of it's coming in for commercial development. They're not putting a dime of investment in residential. And until we start addressing these issues of what's going to help our people who have property, they are property rich and cash poor, they have equity, and how we're going to help get some of these issues of the financing piece, which this brother, you have broken down for us today to understand, we're going to continue to be chasing our tails.
Well, I would say to you, Brother Mark, Brother Ron, is that I believe And the free market dynamics, okay, are going to basically drive this process. Because, again, getting back to what we talked about in New York State, you want to go 100% renewable energy, okay? New York State, in terms of their green bank, how they're doing is that they're providing different types of guarantees and so on and so forth based on credit risk and et cetera and so on and so forth.
But the market doesn't matter if you have regulated states where 65% of the African American population reside with our HBCUs and enterprise zones, and we only have 3 solar plants built on 106 HBCUs. Number one expenditure after salary at any college and university is energy. And we got the land, but they can't build large-scale power plants because they got to get behind the meter because this is a regulated market, and the utility companies only give you 13 cents and look at the spread of what they're selling it to the end user for 11 cents or 18 cents. You can't build a solar power plant and get into this energy industry, and we got black farmers and private landowners who want to get into this game in regulated states. How do we address that?
Well, it's very, very simple. Again, getting back to where the growth and understanding market dynamics, the fastest growing segment of the market, okay, is community shared solar, which is building community microgrids. Only because the spread between the commercial and the residential rate is much greater, which is sufficient to be able to build the projects. Those folks that are landowners should be the developers of their own project. So they can also participate in all of the fees and everything else that goes associated with developing their own project. And it's versus letting somebody come in from the outside. But the commercial solar market, unfortunately, because of the competition between utilities and the commercial rate, and the solar rate that you could build solar projects is so narrow, so it's basically unprofitable. That's the reason why Sun Edison went out of business. So we got to understand the dynamics of the market and the dynamics.
So you're saying that black folk got land who want to get into the game because if they're in a regulated state and they got to get behind the meter from that local utility, they can their best business model option is to take that land and do a community solar project.
That's right. Here's a key thing, and because that's why, again, remember how the utilities are threatened, okay, by community shared solar, because it's basically encroaching on their retail monopoly. And
well,
so
that's
state
the
legislatures,
point.
Yeah, the state legislature.
We just had a test case in North Carolina, Reverend Nelson's church out of Greensboro, North Carolina. They did a community solar project, which was funded by a nonprofit. They put up to 20K. They put the PV system on the roof. They put the system up. They sold the green kilowatts to their membership at 5 cents versus Duke at 11. Duke sued them, and the case went through the system. I could not believe from the time that they filed the action, it went complete to it was a test case. It went straight to the Supreme Court, and they ruled in 90 days.
Right. Well, I think, there's going to be those hurdles, but it's not the end all. In understanding the development process, the monopoly power of utilities is based upon data and information.
Okay.
When we control our data and our information, which is, again, part of the project that we're working on with the SunSwarm Solar Database Development Program, then I don't care what the utility is. If they want them to get subscribed into their community solar project, they still have to go through a whole process to get people to opt in. And they cannot do that, okay, just by themselves. They have to do that in partners with the communities that they're trying to transition. And so they can, now they're using very sophisticated, there are lots of pilots that are going on where they're trying to be able to harvest that data in a way that will allow for instance, SunPower did a pilot here in New York where they, Con Ed, because they're precluded from owning community shared solar projects in New York State, they spun off their data division into a group called Con Ed Solutions. And then what they did was they took the data, okay, and they set up a pilot that will allow SunPower. They selected a couple of solar installers like SunPower that gave them access to the data, And so their model is that when you move into the residence, okay, then your bill automatically, they've already got the assessment.
I don't want to cut you off, but we're getting ready to go off the air in about 60 seconds. So what I'm going to do, brother, is I'm going to have you back on because it's a lot that we didn't cover, but I wanted to get as much from you as I could today, and I think our listening audience was well educated around the issues that you have spoken down and broken down to for our listening audience. But I'm going to have you back on because we didn't even do several segments that we had scheduled for the day. And I only programmed an hour and a half because I can do a two-hour show. And when I bring you back on, I'm going to program it for 2 hours because I can see that you have a lot to share with our community. So
well, thank
I want
you, so
you
much.
To
I
sort
really
of call. Yeah, and I just want you to close with some closing comments for our listening audience because, I mean, you touched upon a lot of things, and I really appreciate that. So could you just sort of sum up any closing points you may want to make to our listening audience today?
Yeah, I will say that we need to be prepared. We need to understand that this transition is not going to happen without us. And so it is incumbent upon us. We have the talent. It's the urban markets of the future. We got the young engineers. We got the young technicians. We have the whole infrastructure. And this is the market for our young people in the future. And they can't do it without us. And so we just have to continue to advocate and press to make sure and help the industry and the government understand that without the support of people of color, their goals, Green New Deal or whatever, is just not going to happen.
Well, I agree with you 2,000%, Eric. I've been beating that drum with the Director of Energy and Environment for over 3 years now, Tommy Wells here. And as I indicated, I've seen good programs that were funded, get this funded, and that had the only educational outreach model for the black community. It wasn't being run by a black organization, NGO, but the folks were doing an excellent job. Neighborhoods United, Solar for All. I mean, they honored me as a solar outreach ambassador because I really pushed the program because I saw it changing people's lives. But they no longer have an education component. So the whole thing is there's nobody with an education component out there other than this format you listen to right now talking to these issues because they're no longer out in communities. They pull their grant. So it is what it is.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's to their economic peril. At the end of the day, it's about market share. We are in the urban market, and we are a viable market. And they can't enter into this market, and they won't have the capability in order to be able to interact with our markets without our help. And that's an economic decision on their part.
Well, I'm going to have to close on that today, Brother Eric, but thank you very much for taking time from your very, very busy schedule because you've given our listening audience an hour and a half, and I think the information that you've shared is invaluable because you do this every day, and see, that's what I have, that's why I put this platform together to reach out to give individuals such as you who are out here doing the work, an opportunity to be heard to our communities locally and nationally. And I really appreciate you taking time from your busy schedule to be a guest on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Thank you.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the founder of the Green Church Initiative. He also has an omni research group, and this brother is a minister. He's been doing some outstanding work up in New York market area, and I hope you appreciated that conversation here on the platform of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And until next week, I hope we brought you news that you could definitely use. So as I normally say, son, we're good to next week.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.